Welcome to Voices of the Valley, a series interviewing growers, entrepreneurs, educators, and technologists who are inventing new solutions for today's and tomorrow's challenges on the farm. Brought to you by Reedley College, educating the next generation of agriculturalists in advanced technology, efficient production practices, and food safety. Now here's your hosts of Voices of the Valley, Dennis Donahue and Candace Wilson.
This is Dennis Donahue, the director of Western Growers Center for Innovation and Technology, and we're back again with my good friend Candace Wilson to do another episode of Voices of the Valley. Candace, good to see you.
So nice to see your face again. How are you?
I'm doing fine and excited to be back on the Voices of the Valley beat. You know, we were able to get a little bit ahead and we're going to go international on as we resume some of our recordings. And we've got somebody who I've had a chance to meet a couple times in probably the last year or so, from Peru, one of the co-founders and CEO of SpaceAg, Guillermo Divivenco. Hopefully I got that pretty close. Guillermo, welcome, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Dennis. Thank you, Candace, for the invitation. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, and you know, you're hot off the press with, you've been spending some time up in the US and Canada and getting a little recognition. Tell us about that, and then we'll jump into SpaceAg got started and all that sort of thing.
Yes, we were selected among the 10 companies in the global cohort of SDG Venture Thrive. And we were selected as winners of the Innovation Prize. So we not only got the recognition by Thrive, but also an additional investment in our company. So it's good news. We've been applying to Thrive since 2018 every year, and we finally did it, got in 2022. And then to win the program, that's something that we were not expecting. So it's all good news in that front.
Well, congratulations. Well, I think that's well-deserved. And frankly, I'm surprised it took anyone a couple of years to figure out that you guys are onto something. Talk a little bit about, you know, your background, how SpaceAg came to be, you know, because I know you have some partners in the process. And then I'm really intrigued by what you saw as the market opportunity. You know, you obviously have a passion for this, because the way you've grown, you obviously saw something. So, kind of a three-part question.
Okay. So about my background, I'm not a farmer. My grandfather had rice fields, so he was the only grower in our family. So we visited those farms, and I got a little attached to being in the farm. But me myself, I'm a business administrator. I got my MBA at New York University, and when I studied in New York, I specialized in entrepreneurship, thinking that it's something that can be taught. But actually, what I learned is that it's something that you're going to learn when you do it. And but I really wanted to explore the venture capital market in Latin America. It was something that it was in its early stages. So my goal was to study, work in the US for a while, and then go back to Peru and Latin America and be involved in growing the venture capital industry in the region, which worked not as fast as I was expecting, but I got into a couple of jobs and then went back to Peru. I co-founded the first angel investor network in Peru and SeedVC Fund, where I managed it for a couple of years, and then I participated in the investment committee. So we were connecting great entrepreneurs with funds, angels for our own VC fund, early stage VC fund. So the thing that was missing in the equation was founding my own startup. And that's something I did because I saw a great opportunity to tackle the agricultural market in Peru on one side, and on the other hand, I found the best co-founder possible. Cesar Urrutia is my friend since we are 5 years old, good friends, and he had a great background to open the business and to scale it. He has been doing remote sensing for more than 20 years. He co-founded a startup before in Italy where he sold images to different industries from satellites. It was even before Google Earth, so he's very innovative in that matter. And then he started working in agriculture and just monitoring fields using drones and satellites. And that's how we come to meet again in alumni lunch, and we started to talk, and eventually we decided to co-found SpaceAg and to solve a problem for.
Well, SpaceAg is a great name. I mean, at one level, it kind of says it all. But having said that, you know, the product, and then obviously Peru is really an area that's really grown from an agricultural standpoint. We know you have some terrific production regions down there, certainly a lot more US and I'm sure overall North American activity. So, SpaceAg products, what you do, services provided. And then the other thing I can't help, I mean, was it a market void that you saw? Because, you know, platforms, there are perhaps competitive companies out there, or perhaps not. I mean, what was the opening you saw?
Yeah. So because of my co-founder's background, we started the business selling drone images to growers. And then we quickly realized that, you needed to combine those images with data from growers to make sense of those images. So we started to look everywhere in Latin America, in the US, in Europe, Israel, for software that we can represent in Peru. So we didn't want to build our own stuff from scratch. We wanted to partner with a software company that already had something built and then tropicalize it so it can make sense for Latin American growers. But we didn't find the software we were looking for. I mean, we find a lot of farm management software that were using satellite imagery and satellite imagery analysis, but there were few that were using drone imagery and that were focused on high-value crop growers. And because Peru has become the first exporter of blueberries, second of avocados worldwide, third in table grapes, there was a booming industry of high-value crop growers in Peru, in which we have a very easy access, a lot of friends and people we know work in agriculture in Peru, in these new great companies that are exporting these fruits to all the world. So we figured out that we needed to build a software that can help them integrate imagery with data coming from the ground in a single platform, just to compare and make sense of those images. Although we were wrong. I mean, that was the first product, but we didn't solve the problem for the mainstream market. We solved a problem for some early adopters or innovative customers that were willing to digitize a lot of their KPIs like irrigation, weather, or production, labor, etc. And then we just connected our software via APIs with those sources of data. But then most of the growers didn't have those systems digitized, so they were still using paper and pen to collect data in the ground and then typing those reports into spreadsheets, and then they were just living among thousands of spreadsheets. So what we figured out the next product was to be built was digital notebooks, so growers can take their smartphone to the field and collect data using their smartphone. And what we learned is not to build a product that was closed or too structured, but something that was very flexible, very adaptable, that can be used to collect information about different processes from irrigation, pest and disease control, phenology, labor. So we built a product that is very adaptable, very flexible to collect any type of data during the whole growing season for different crops. And we started to focus the product a lot on people, because at the end of the day, it's people who are doing most of the data collection in the ground. When we're talking about high-value crops, in commodity crops, you'll find a lot of IoT and sensors because there's not so much variability between one plant and the other. But in high-value crops, in the same plot of land, in 1 acre, you can find completely differences from one part of the plot to the other. So you need people working in the field. And how can you empower those people with digital tools to help you collect data and make better decisions? So we focus our product on people working in the fields and connecting that data to managers. And that's how we started to scale.
How do you prioritize what problems you are starting to observe in the data that you're entering and stuff?
A lot of what we do is ROI analysis. So when you have a flexible product, and this is a great question, because the biggest struggle is you can do so many things with that product. So which things do you focus on? So where do you spend your resources to get a stronger use case in those things that are more important for farmers? For us, what is more important for growers is helping them increase their profits at the end of the day and do it in a sustainable way. So a lot of our prioritization process is this feature going to add real value to the growers? Can we quantify that value? Can we trace it directly to our product? And if that is okay, if we have a check on those items, we can go ahead and build it. But we're not building features or products just because customers ask for those products. It's more about an economic analysis in which we figure out what products can create the most profit for our customers.
And when you started out, were there specific, you talked about blueberries, grapes, how did you guys start? What crops did you prioritize, work through your test market? How did that expansion feel?
Yes. So most of the decisions, or a big part of the decision to tackle the high value crop market, was because of our location, because Peru, in 10 years, because it's a new industry in Peru, it has become one of the biggest producers and exporters of high value crops. So we were trying to leverage on the strengths of the country, right? Because if you are a startup trying to compete in the global market and you are in Peru, you have a disadvantage. Right? You have a smaller, if you're tackling, for example, the consumer, you have a very small market. So how can we leverage on the strengths of the country to make a product that can be valuable in the whole world? So what we saw is that if we really solve the problem for big customers in the high-value crop market in Peru, those big companies have global operations. So if we're adding value for them in Peru, they can take us to their countries and they can help us in a very clear and tangible way to scale to international markets. So that's something we consider in the crops and also in the type of customers we tackle. Customers that have operations in several locations, that have companies that exist in different countries. So that's something that we prioritize too.
And, you know, and one of the reasons, you know, I think this is an important conversation for Western grower members to be attentive to is because so many of our growers are involved on a year-round basis and they are producing in Mexico, Latin America. They've got to be the same company operationally every day. Things have to be seamless because, you know, you mentioned Peru within a decade has kind of become an emerging powerhouse in each of the crops that you mentioned. I mean, certainly from a California standpoint, we know where some of our production went. You know, so obviously things are, so you have new people, new players going to market, but you also have folks we're quite familiar with who are working closely with Peruvian growers. So, and I think you alluded to it because one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, you know, if you go to your website, you know, you've got, if I recall correctly, like 3,000 clients and you're already operating in six countries. And I know you're looking to expand that list, but it sounds like you were very tactical about who was on your hit list to become early customers because you could kind of grow on their back.
Yes, definitely. And I think closing deals with the biggest growers of this type of crops since start, like Ortifrut, Driscoll's, Mission, that was a decisive action that we took in the early stages of the company, but not thinking about monetization in that stage, but more in how can we collaborate with these customers to create a product that really solves their problems. So when we approached these companies from the start, because we didn't wait till the product was ready to start talking with them, we were already talking with them before we were building the product, telling them what we were trying to build or what problems we were trying to solve in a very open and transparent way. We also built a team that was supporting that strategy that could build great products. And when they saw our commitment to helping them solve the problems and to iterating the development of a new product, they were interested. And going through that process of product development with top companies, global companies, helped us create a product that can be used not only in Peru, but also in many other countries for a lot of different tasks. So yeah, I think that was a very clear strategy that we had since the start. How can we capture big early adopters companies that could help us with their recognition? You can talk about we're working with Ortifrut in Peru, so we can scale with them to Mexico. And once we get to Mexico, they know that we're working with one of the largest growers of blueberries. So new doors open, and then that momentum can help us grow with our customers, maybe smaller customers in other countries too.
Can you share some of the specific, like, I'm not certain the product concept is the right word, but if you're working on avocados, what are some of the problems that you're trying to tackle versus blueberries?
Yes, so there's a lot of use cases. There's a lot of problems that you can tackle with our software. I think that's one of its main attributes, that instead of buying different software for different problems or tasks that you have in the field, you can buy our product and it will solve a lot of problems, mostly all problems related to how you can monitor your operations in the farm, right? Your farm's operations. So for example, in avocado, our product has a lot of phenology control. So how can users of our product monitor the growth of the fruits and then register that on the phone? So they have information, reliable information, geolocalized with times to feed their yield forecast. So a lot of data collection in the ground to improve yield forecast, a lot of data collection related to pest and disease control, and then a lot of information or data collection related to labor. And that's where we really, I think, start to create an integrated and compelling value proposition. Because once you start thinking about not only providing a solution that helps you increase your yields, but also providing a solution that can help your people in the farm be more productive and enjoy more the work and get back home sooner because they don't need to prepare reports at the end of the day, and you start focusing on people, I think that's what really helped us strengthen our value proposition. So if you compare what information they collect in blueberries or avocados or grapes or citrus, there could be some differences, especially when we're talking about plants. So maybe in blueberry, you are harvesting 30 times the same plant. In avocado, you do it just once. So the whole harvesting monitoring is going to be different. But then when you're thinking about labor is something that is very standard in different crops. So they suffer the same problems: labor shortage, low labor productivity, gap between the growers and the temporary workers or the harvesters. So those problems are recurrent. And once you find a recurrent problem, that could be the thesis behind your new customers. So you can go approach new customers with solving that problem of labor and then scale your solutions with other use cases that you can upsell or cross-sell to the customers.
You know, I'm curious, before we got on the air, we were chatting about that one of the markets you're starting to look at is Mexico. And then having spent some time in the US recently, and you want to get into the US market as well. Does the world get for you? Because I'm always kind of curious how this gets resolved with that idea. You know, you've mentioned the name of some pretty good companies, and I don't know the details of their ag ops, but you know, you'd assume a Driscoll or a Mission or those kind of folks, they're looking at similar sorts of things up here. Are you ahead of the curve in terms of competitive scenarios, or by virtue of the fact you've worked with them and to some respects, not necessarily their most difficult area, but you know, once you leave your home court, you know, your resources and your relationships become critical. So is the fact you've kind of, you know, in many respects, you're kind of reverse engineering your way back into the bigger markets. That seems to be kind of a good formula. And then, but my question, as you get further, you know, into the US market, does the customer have a decision to make on who to work with or how to twin or how do you integrate all that?
Yes, I think talking about competition and how can they decide once we enter a new market, we want to work with PaySack and not with another software company that it might be bigger and maybe have a stronger brand recognition in that market. Why would they work with us? What new can we bring to the table? And that's something I mean, it has to do a lot with how we think about the product. And what we do is we try to find among the many use cases that the customer needs to improve, which ones they could use or they could implement using our software that they're not happy with their current solution. So in some cases, the current solution is paper and pen. And we're just trying to replace how they capture data and share that data in the farm. And when we see an opportunity to digitize one use case using our software, we can get inside that customer just by implementing that particular use case. So they don't need to buy the whole software from the start. They can still be working with our competition for different areas of the business, but they're doing one thing with us and they're doing it well. And once they start learning about what else can we do for them, they start using our software for other use cases, right, until a point where using more of our software requires them to not use our competition software. So get rid of our competition and start using our software instead. And we're winning that battle because we are thinking about digitization or digital transformation in agriculture from the ground up, not from the manager's level, but from the people who work in the fields. So our product is a product that it works offline. It's very easy to use for people that are not tech savvy. It's very flexible and it can work in low performance devices. So people who are working in the fields, supervisors, scouts, they can use their own phones and it works well. So when we started to think about our main user, not as the manager, but as the people who are in the fields every day, working in the fields, using their own phones with no technology background or nothing sophisticated in that matter, that's where you really win the game because that's where the data is produced. And there's no sensor that's going to replace people anytime soon in data collection for high-value crops. So if you empower those people, that's where you're going to get an advantage compared to your competition. Once customers realize that our product is the best product to work in those conditions in the ground for attend that type of user, they start believing that it could be better than their competition. And that's where we start winning contracts to companies that are much more advanced in their businesses and are much larger than ours.
Two questions. One is, how has the conversation around data security evolved over the last 5 years when you're meeting with the Hortifruits of the world or, you know, with Driscoll's? How are they feeling about data security these days?
You know, it hasn't been something that many customers are concerned about. So very standard data security processes of replicating are the data that they upload in an additional server in the cloud, maybe in some cases in hardware, so in physical computers or CPUs, but it hasn't been a big deal for them. I mean, we have in our plans to get some certifications in data security, but more as additional attributes for the company, but not as something that really is a concern or we don't see a concern in the market for that type of information. And even that, it's incredible. Some customers are sharing or they want to share data. They want to share data about what's going on in their fields because they feel like if more growers share their data, the aggregated data could be useful for the whole group instead of just thinking as silos. If we share data about a pest or like we see this COVID, right? A pandemic hitting the planet. And if we collaborate, we can tackle that problem faster and more effectively. So that's something we're even finding customers that are not concerned about this data security. On the other hand, they want to share the data if their neighbor shares the data and they can start making decisions in groups instead of a single individual companies.
For sure. That's the North Star, right? We've been preaching that for years and years and trying to get growers to understand that benefit. So I'm glad to hear that they're starting to come along and warm up to that idea. My second question is in terms of, so you go through this data collection period. From there, what kind of, who's working on the data analysis? What kind of recommendations? How's that exchange of information?
Yes, that's a great question. So I think that the main thing you have to achieve when you think about software as a platform of data collection is just the right way to collect data and make sure that your platform has the most amount of data compared to other options. So the first step for us was thinking of ourselves as a platform that is very good in data collection. And this means not only creating the tools in-house for growers to collect data, like using our app to collect data about what's going on in the field with plants and people, but also integrating the right sources of data into our platform. So we integrated Planet, Sentinel in imagery, satellite imagery. We integrated Davis in weather stations. We have integrations with irrigation companies. So all those efforts of integration and product development that can help you achieve the amount of data that you need for the platform to be valuable. What we do in processing is mostly create reports so they can visualize that data and share that data faster. So they can take more precise and timely decisions because they can act faster. And also they can trust more the data because they know where the data was collected by who at what time. So they make sure that that data that they're taking decisions with is accurate. And then there's the other part of the product roadmap, which is, okay, well, now we have this data and we're creating the report. So customers are encouraged to upload more and more data. And we have a huge volume of data existing in a platform. What do we do with this data? Should we go into analytics and try to figure out how to do, I don't know, variable rate applications of pesticides, or should we do yield forecasting models? Or you have so many options when you're talking about data analytics that if you choose one, you probably lose your focus and will need to. And so I'll give you an example. So if we were thinking about doing yield forecasts with the data, so yield forecasting, we started with blueberries. And we build great models for blueberries, counting fruits from images and then trying to figure out how much the volume of the harvest was going to be at the end of the season. But then if we wanted to take the same model from the north of Peru to the south of Peru, and there were huge differences in soil, in temperature, humidity, and all that stuff made the model, we needed to adapt the model to the same variety of the same crop in a different location within the same country. So imagine if you want to scale that model to other types of blueberries in different countries, it's going to be so hard to scale that it's really going to take an impact on your growth. It's also going to reduce your market size because you'll need to do a data analytics for many different crops in different parts. So it's going to be very hard to do it all. So what we think about data, how we think about data analytics in our platform is connecting the right partners to provide those recommendations in our software. So we are shifting from a platform vision to an ecosystem vision in which we secure the most amount of data that can exist in a active platform in our software. And then we connect the right partners to provide intelligence from that data. We're doing some of that stuff already. We're working with an Australian startup that is using images of the and video of plants collected with our software to count the number of fruits, blueberries, and do yield forecasting. We're also working with another company to do recognition of pests and diseases from pictures, because there's a lot of startups doing very great stuff in data analytics. Yeah. But they don't have the data. So we do have the data and they have the intelligence. So if we integrate them in our platform and we think about connecting the data collection with the data intelligence in our platform and a platform being the ecosystem, that's going to be something that is really scalable. And our, just to close this answer, the data related to people, how much each person is harvesting, how many days of the week is he working? Is he doing the job well or is he damaging the fruit when harvest? All that information, we're now using it to connect with fintech companies and banks because they can provide loans to those people. Again, how can that data that we're including or inputting in our platform, or customers are feeding our platform with, can be valuable if we apply certain analytics to that data?
Well, you know, before we close, and I want to shift gears with kind of a broader question. You know, I was pleased to hear you say people aren't going anywhere anytime soon, because one of the themes that we like to talk about at Western Growers, and Candace and I do, is, you know, first of all, everybody's having a tough time finding sufficient people. So it becomes even more important to provide tools that enhance productivity and working conditions. And I liked what you said, you get to get home earlier, that type of thing. So we always appreciate hearing that. And then the other thing is the Western Growers, we've been spending a lot of time working on them. You know, what are the skills for the next generation of ag worker? And you know, and it's pretty hard not to take note of the fact, you know, you build a company that really is functional you know, before you go to the boardroom and get the sale, you better get the cavalry on board in the field, or you're, you know, top down here, you're going to do this. Doesn't work as well as we might think it all might logically would. So as we close or just kind of shift gears, I've got, you know, one more question I want to talk to you about the Latin American scene. What are the hard skills, for lack of a better phrase, that just the folks who are working in the operations side need to learn, if anything?
So the hard skills, I think they're not really that hard. I'm thinking about the people who use our software to
collect data.
And I mean
data. Specific, not hard, but just, you know, yeah. Kind of the, you know, the nuts and bolts, you know, what are the skill sets they need to pick up? You've mentioned they can just use their phone and that type of thing. Yeah, how difficult is it to use the product? And what are the skills required?
I think that's a key issue. And that's something that when we started to build the product for data collection in the ground, we really thought hard about this, because users, which now are for that product, are scouts and supervisors. These people, in many cases, they don't even have a high school diploma, and they are not savvy in the use of technology. So how can you build a product that it's easy for them to use? So I think the most difficult part is for them to learn how to interact with the software, but it's not a hard skill because they already interact with their phone for a lot of things. So they know how to get into social media using their phone. They know how to write an email, and then they know the basic stuff. And then when you provide them with a product that is not sophisticated, it's not complex, it's very simple to use, they learn pretty fast, especially when they see that if they do it, they're going to get an immediate benefit in productivity. And so that's great, because I think, and I was thinking a lot about skills, and there's not really hard skills, and there's not really complex skills or new skills, sorry, that the users need to learn to start taking advantage of our product.
Well, and that's certainly good news for adoption and use and growth, I think.
Yes, definitely. And something that we monitor pretty closely is the Net Promoter Score, the NPS, so how users of our software value our software. And it's, in our case, it's different maybe than other companies, because those users are not paying for the software. They're not the customers. Customers are, in many cases, are forcing them to use our software. And they're forcing them to use our software in their own phones. They're not even providing them with phones. They're telling them, you need to download this app. You have this app in your phone. In many cases, those phones are not iPhones. They're not like new generation phones. They're basic smartphones. And they can see that they can start using our app in their own phones with all that, the friction that could be, right? You're making me use a new product. You're making me use my own phone. I was already happy with paper and pen. And NPS tells us a great story, because NPS has been really, really over and very much over the industry standard. Our users value our software, our solutions very much, in a way that they're not only rating us with a lot of 10s out of 0 to 10, but also they're leaving their comments. And they're taking the time to leave their comments in our software. And in many cases, comments are like, thank you, or you're helping me in my everyday work, or I can be home sooner, I can spend more time with my folks, and all that stuff that really motivate us, because that's where you realize you're changing the lives of people in the fields. And I think that's something that's very also positive for our business, because when customers ask their users, hey, are you happy with this? Yeah, we are with SpaceX. So we are the best validation possible.
Those are good words. Well, Candace, I have one more question, but anything else from you before I ask my question?
No, I just loved, I want to share with our listeners also, as you described that end note about helping people and stuff, Guillermo had a huge smile on his face. You could tell him that that's a lot of the fuel in his motivation as well. So that's...
Yeah. And that's good stuff to get on the brochures as testimonials. So don't don't forget to include that. Those are good messages. Well, I want to kind of close with where we first started, how you went up to NYU and then you came home and you kind of wanted to help create the ag tech scene in Latin America and in Peru. You know, there's a number of huge events happening in South America over the next couple of weeks. You know, that's that old dual hemisphere. You know, our summer is your winter. So you know, folks have a little time and, you know, get together. It seems to me the Latin American ag tech scene is really, it's obviously very active, but really on the move now. And so I'm just kind of curious what your take of the whole ag tech scene is in Latin America. And, you know, just like Peru is really kind of emerged as a production area, it appears to be kind of emerging as a ag tech hotspot as well. So just kind of your overview of the scene down there as we close.
Yeah, it's great to have an opportunity to talk about this. So definitely compared to 5 years ago, it's a completely different scene. We've seen many companies come from Argentina, Brazil, Chile, some in Peru. Peru is a less evolved market in that matter. And it's growing. I think we also see not only a lot of new startups, but new investors. So 5 years ago or 4 years ago, we had two or three funds that were investing in Latin American companies, like, I mean, VC funds, institutional funds. And now we have more than, I mean, I can think of more than 10 that are actively investing in Latin America. And not only investing in more deals, but also bigger deals, right? So there's a lot of money coming into the region, more entrepreneurs, more growers that are trying out new solutions too. I think the main challenge that we have to grow the startup, agtech startup ecosystem in Latin America would be right now related to valuations. We see companies in the US getting much higher valuations in earlier stages than Latin American companies. And that has a strong impact on the business because, and you probably know this very well, but validation cycles in agriculture are longer, right? You need to spend the whole year, agricultural year, to prove the results if your product is working or not. And that requires more cash to extend your runway and have the time and the oxygen to really validate those use cases and then get your product market fit, create your revenue model, scale, show good metrics to investors for them to invest in the next round. And because valuations are lower, the amount of money that you can raise without diluting is lower, and the oxygen or the runway you have to validate your products in a hard market as it is agriculture, it's tougher. So I think that's the main challenge agtech startups have right now. I think a great way to tackle that challenge would be to start thinking as a global company since the start and just think about Latin America as a region where you can validate your solutions quickly, but then start working in the US or at least visiting and talking with investors in the US and growers in the US very in the early stages so you can get noticed and also they can see the opportunity since the start. And then I think that could help.
Now, Candace and I certainly wanted to visit with you because I think you're doing terrific work and it's a great young company and congratulations on your recent achievements up here. But, you know, this, I think one of the things to your point is the game is getting increasingly global. And, you know, the fact you've picked up some pretty strong US customers, you know, has helped with the growth. So there's probably no better example of the strategy that's necessary to get some of those valuations up than what you're doing. So we'll be on the lookout for your future success on top of what you've already accomplished. And we sure appreciate you taking the time to visit with us today. It's great to get more familiar with Latin America. It's an area we're going to be paying more attention to on behalf of our Western grower members. So thank you for your time. And we hope to see you up in California the next time you get up this way at the Innovation Center.
It's great. Thank you for your time too and the opportunity to talk with you. I'll definitely visit California in the next few months and any grower that might be interested in building with us something adaptable to that market. That's also, we're very open to collaborate.
We'll leave the lights on at the Innovation Center, so come see us. We'll help you with that. So Candace, always enjoyable to get together. What do you say we do it again next week?
We shall. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us and I'll look forward to next time, Dennis.
Terrific, as will I. This has been another episode of Voices of the Valley. And as you heard Candace promise, we'll be back again next week with another interesting guest to join us on Voices of the Valley. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Voices of the Valley podcast, brought to you today by Reedley College. To learn more about Reedley College's Agriculture and Natural Resources program and the courses offered in Ag Technology, Food Safety, and Plant Science, you can visit reedleycollege.edu.